It is 2 o'clock on April 6, 2011. I want to welcome everyone to the Texas Library Association webinar, Leadership, Some Personal Thoughts, with Dana Rooks, Rhoda Goldberg, and Maribel Castro.
Yes, I'm already in listening, but is it not going to show anything?
Again, we want to remind people, if they want to hear the audio, please be sure to dial in toll-free to 866-740-1260. And key in the same access code, 414-6650. If anyone has any trouble seeing or hearing any part of today's webinar, please contact the ReadyTalk support line, toll-free at 800-843-9166. That's 800-843-9166.
Hold on a second.
Continuing education certificates for today's webinar will be available next week on www.txla.org/CE, along with free recordings of today's webinar. Because we have over 120 people registered for today's session, we are asking people to please mute their phone line with a star six to mute. You'll be able to unmute your phone later with a *7. But please press *6 to mute. And that's just to hold down background noise during the presentation. You'll be able to raise your hand electronically during the session by using the raise hand button, or you can type questions to us via the chat box in the lower left-hand corner of your screen. The Twitter hashtag for today's webinar will be #TLAWeb, #TLAWeb. And I want to introduce our speakers for today. As I'm sure all of you are busy using the *6 to mute your phone. Your speakers today include Dana Rooks, Dean of Libraries and Elizabeth D. Rockwell Chair at the University of Houston, and the main author of our article in the Texas Library Journal. Rhoda Goldberg, Director of the Harris County Library System. And Maribel Castro, who is the current president of the Texas Library Association, and she's also a librarian for the Coronado High School in Lubbock, Texas. I want to welcome our speakers. I will go, as you begin, I will go ahead and help people out with the muting function to get the background noise. But go ahead, please.
Well, welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Dana Rooks, and I'm very honored to be joining my two colleagues, Rhoda and Maribel, to talk about leadership. And I consider them to be two of the most effective library leaders I've had the opportunity to work with over the years, and I'm also very interested in hearing their observations on leadership. What we want to do today is to have a conversation between us and with you about our personal observations and thoughts about leadership. We're going to talk about what leadership is about. We're going to discuss some key traits of effective leaders in our views, our own list of essential skills and capabilities, and other qualities of leaders. And finally, we want to respond to your questions and comments about your observations and views of leadership. As librarians, we're offered everything from lengthy summer institutes at prestigious universities to going into our own shelves and finding dozens and dozens of self-help books that offer us the 10 easy steps to leadership. So the first question, Ted, go ahead and move the slide. Let me do that. There we go. So there's lots of opportunities to find ways to study leadership and to try to develop ourselves as leaders. But the first question that I would ask each of you is, why would you not want to be a leader? Yet I find too often that many librarians are shying away from leadership roles that they could take in their community, in their institutions, and in TLA. So what we want to talk about today is issues that we think will help you decide to be a leader. Leadership isn't about management or supervision. It exists at every level in every organization, and it's a positive force. and it's vital to the success of any group. And we find that it's needed at all levels in all organizations. You don't have to be an appointed department head or director or anything else to be a leader. Leadership is about a lot of things, but one of it is about relationships. It's about influence. It's not about command and control. Your skills as a leader are measured by the willingness of those around you to follow you and what you're leading about. It's a vital component of the success of what we're all trying to do in our own lives and in our organizations. How many of us have been part of a group where there's either an ineffective designated leader or no leader at all? It's not a fun experience. We've all come out of those meetings and those efforts feeling that it's a waste of our time, it's a waste of effort, and that it was not a positive experience because there's no effective leader. Leader's about vision, inspiring others to share the vision. It's about the larger group and not the individual. It's about trust and credibility. Maribel, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, there's a quote that I've kept on my desk. I read it a few years ago. It was a quote by Eric Hoffer, and it says, and it reads, "The leader has to be practical and a realist, yet must talk the language of the visionary and the idealist." And I find that I have found in almost any leadership position that I've had that you do as a leader have to be very practical about what you can accomplish. And sometimes you think, well, the practicality might just ruin the vision. But I think what happens is when the people you are trying to lead, when the people that you are trying to guide to a larger goal, you've got an objective in mind, they have to hear that you are in total belief of this goal, of this vision, of that objective. And this is all just part of the general dynamic of being a leader. And when you talk about, and that's bringing the focus and the direction, but usually it's also about establishing, as you were saying, about establishing those relationships, about being aware of your environment, about recognizing who your key players are, as you've emphasized in your article, and because you cannot go further, you cannot reach that goal, you cannot get to that vision unless you've established some relationships. Yeah, they're pivotal. And I will never forget one of my first bosses says, "You never know who you're going to work for, so watch your relationships." And that has been, for me, a driving force. In establishing the people that I want to work with, that I want to actually work with, it's a committee at work or a committee at the state level, is making sure that the people who are going to be a part of your group, that are going to help you carry the work forward, are the people who you are going to be able to provide something for, and they're going to be able to provide something for you, which goes to what you had said in your article also about that mutual, that reciprocity, that the relationship is going to be mutually beneficial.
Rhoda?
I think that leadership is not a position. Leadership is a person. We lead people. And I think when we talk about the relationships, we can't talk enough about the relationships with the people involved. And I think to begin to be a leader, you have to build trust. So others will work for you, with you. Others will trust your leadership. You have to model the way for leaders. I think what, you know, the saying, you know, you have to talk the talk and walk the walk. And I think to build those relationships, the people that you're working with have to know you're with them all of the way. And I think something Maribel said really resonated with me about that when you're talking about your vision, you also have to keep in mind the practical aspect of that vision and how you're going to achieve it. And you have to communicate that to the people you're working with. I think it's very important to stay grounded in the reality of your situation.
One of the things we hear a great deal about in these institutes and workshops and read about in the articles and books are the key traits that a leader is supposed to have, and how leadership is defined by these qualities or traits. I've never found any, you know, definitive list. You read something and they'll give you anywhere from 3 to 10 or more qualities, and they're all a bit different. So Rhoda and Maribel and I have sort of developed our own personal brief list of what we look for in a leader. And the first trait that I value most is what I've always called the honest broker. I want a leader who doesn't try to manipulate me, or worse yet, even, you know, lie to me or slide something past me. If a leader can't make a promise that he shouldn't make a promise that he or she can't keep. It's okay not to promise me anything. Just tell me the vision and I'll follow. But the leader has to accept the responsibility for the mistakes or the failures. But the difference is that the leader then is responsible for moving that group forward and getting them back on a path to success, whether that's starting over or modification. The second feature that I have is following someone who has a vision, who can help me understand and share that vision. Leaders look ahead. They see what could be. Their vision is very clear to them, and they're very passionate about it. And they must have the ability then to inspire me to see that vision and to believe in it and to follow them to achieve it. And the third thing that I want to see is a leader who shares credit. If the group succeeds, the leader will always receive credit without laying any claim to that credit. If you hire super outstanding people and they do a huge job in your library, you're the ones that get thanked. The leaders are the ones that get thanked. If you head a group in a volunteer organization that's trying to achieve a goal and that goal gets achieved, the leader's always recognized for that without having to take anything away from the membership or claim credit. A group rarely succeeds without a leader, but I guarantee you a leader will never succeed without that support of the group. And the last thing is that I want a leader who leads, not one who commands. I follow a leader because I believe in them, not because I'm obligated. Micromanagers are not leaders. Micromanagers lack confidence in their own abilities. They're insecure. Leaders are confident, and they're competent, but they exhibit humility. So those are my top items that I look for in a leader. Rhoda?
Well, I think the first thing I think you talk about, you call it the honest broker, and I would call it integrity. A leader has to have integrity. You have to be willing to accept any blame for what goes wrong and not look to kind of shop that blame to other people. And certainly to give credit to the group for all of the successes that you have. Any good leader has to be able to articulate a vision that other people can follow. And I think one of the things that a leader must do is always challenge the present. It's very comfortable when you've succeeded in something to sort of sit back and say, this is really good, and kind of stop for a while. And I think a leader says, what's next? What, you know, where do we go next? What's our next challenge? A leader's always looking for the next challenge.
I can't agree with you more. Your work is never done as a leader. It just never is, because you're always, once you've met an objective, if you've got this overall plan, and we talk about these strategic plans, and we see what exactly where we want to be 3-5 years down the road, and as you start to achieve your goals, you start to achieve your objectives, you're looking for the next thing to do, to just go ahead and move your library forward, move yourself forward, move your institution forward. It's you never stop. It's almost You know, it's a funny thing. Somebody asked me recently, so what now? You know, after your presidency of TLA is over, what now? Well, I can tell you that there's a laundry list of items that I still am very passionate about, and Dana will say the same thing. She's a former president of TLA. There's a laundry list of items that need to be tackled at many levels, and it's just something that you commit to, something that I feel like you have to be passionate about and that you're willing to keep working and striving for the better, like I said, of your institution and of your profession. And, you know, one of the things, and it just hit me just now as I was thinking about it, when I first took a leadership role, and this was a long time ago, one of the hardest things for me, and this is still an issue, and it's something I have to work on all the time, is letting go. In other words, this is what I tell the group I'm ready to do, and everybody seems gung-ho. But then I want to get caught up sometimes in the minutiae of it, and that is something that I struggle with on a day-to-day basis. And I just realize that in order for them to move forward, I need to let them go. I need to let them be at their most creative. I need to let them be at their most passionate level in order to meet our objective. I don't know. Dana and Rhoda can talk about their experience in that respect, but for me, I still find that a challenge as I continue to take on leadership responsibilities.
Okay. Just as the traits and capabilities, or excuse me, traits and qualities, you'll always find in the leadership literature a group of skills and capabilities that every treatise wants to define for you. But I find that there's no guaranteed list of skills or capabilities that you have to possess. As with all people, there are those of us who are strong in one area and weak in another, and we do what we can with the best skills we have. But I do believe that there are some broad constants for successful leaders. And one of those is that they have to be able to learn continuously. The world is just changing too fast. We have to be able to adapt to those changes. We have to be open to others and most importantly, be able to tolerate risk. New generations don't think or respond or expect the same thing that those of you who are my age, which is probably not many of you, that same things that we experience, and they don't view things in the same way. So a leader must learn to understand, to respect, and to learn to adapt to the changing values and the changing expectations if they expect new generations, different cultures, various backgrounds of people to understand and follow the vision that you've put out there. And we can't betray our own values, but we have to respect those different values if we're really going to be a leader. Because as a leader, what we are is a catalyst and a facilitator. We, at our most successful, leaders merge and blend the varying talents and expectations to create just the right mix to achieve success in whatever the vision is. Maribel?
I completely agree with you. I think about the more than anything, it's like planting a little seed. You just throw something out there, and if you've put the right group of people together, they'll look at that. They'll look at your seed, and they'll start watering it, and they start nurturing it. And by the time you know it, the entire group has contributed to something just absolutely immense, like, you know, the 2011 TLA conference. And I think it's learning to disengage. And I'm going to say this personally, just me disengaging completely and just watching the dynamic and contributing where I can, guiding where I can. And it is amazing how much you learn from the people that you work with and the people that you work for. And I have to agree with Dana, it's being completely open to different thoughts, different ways of doing things, and definitely adapting. And I have to say that adapting to your community, finding what's going on, being very sensitive to the environment, and being able to actually contribute where you can, stand back when you can.
I think a leader needs a sense of curiosity to look beyond their knowledge level. Gandhi said, you know, learn like you will live forever. And that's what a leader has to do. That constant learning, that constant looking to the next thing that you don't know and stepping beyond your comfort zone. I think that in our profession is probably the most important thing, is to be able to look beyond what you're comfortable with. A lot of times for people like me, it's technology. I'm not always as knowledgeable as I wish, but I need to learn that. And that is something I think I know that all of us have to do, is step beyond that comfort zone and learn and open ourselves up. A lot of times, I think it's in putting groups together of people of very diverse parts of the library or whatever group you're with, and trying to meld them into a successful group. And you can do that by listening to them and taking a chance and taking a risk and doing what they say, even though it might make you uncomfortable.
Leadership styles is yet another very differing view from lots of people. And I don't believe that there really is any single style of leadership. We can see examples of the very quiet leader who rarely speaks up, but when they do, people really listen to them. They're not the first to speak, they're not the loudest, and they're not the most dynamic, but they have credibility and trust from the group. Then you go to the far end of the spectrum, and you got the dynamic, charismatic leader who speaks with a commanding presence and inspires others to achieve great things. Most of us are in the middle. That doesn't mean we're any less effective. It just means that we have our own style. And we have to learn to adapt that style. If we're in the situation that we're in, leading a large library as the appointed dean or director is a lot different than leading a small volunteer group. However, ineffective leadership, regardless of the group, is going to assure failure in each one of those instances. So we need to learn what kind of leadership styles are most effective in each situation. Rhoda?
I think you're right. I think we have to adapt our style to the group that we are trying to lead, and also kind of define the task. I think that makes all the difference in the kind of leadership you give, whether it's a more active leadership or whether it's somebody who can sit back and let the group go on their own. Maribel?
I think you're right. I think how I want something done, and I'm speaking from, obviously, I'm a school librarian, I want something done at the district level. There's definitely a certain way you approach it. And you have to think about it. Who are the players? What do you know about them? And then make the contact, how you approach what it is you need to do is definitely one way of leading. And then when it comes to the people that I have worked with and those who have worked under me, it's a matter of leading them by example and being open to them, listening to them, helping them, nurturing them along. It's probably one of the most critical pieces about leadership is just being able to, like the picture, being a chameleon, being able to read the group, being able to read your boss, being able to read those who report to you, and being able to address their needs and being able to address what it is you want to do based on that astuteness, being aware of your environment.
To lead, one of the keys is you have to know where you want to go. The leader's at the front. If you're not in the front leading, then the group wanders aimlessly. But this doesn't necessarily mean that the leader determines that path by themselves. But what is a leader's role is to keep the group on the path and to be willing to lead the group, guide the group, with changes, with modifications, whatever, and to accept the risk and accountability for that. The key to me is that the relationships in the group must be mutually beneficial, that everyone has to feel like they're getting a return on the investment of their commitment to the goal. It's a two-way street. You're not always going to lead. Sometimes you're going to follow, and you have to do the same thing. But if you want to ask somebody to follow your lead, you have to be willing to follow the lead of another in a different situation. And you can't lead in the dark. You have to, as a leader, you have to be aware of the environment. You have to be politically astute. Earlier, Rhoda and Maribel both mentioned a practical side, which I think is the role of the leader, to assess the reality, to identify roadblocks and scout the landscape. It's the leader's job to recognize who are the key players and then to help the group develop a strategy to achieve the end result that the group's looking for. And the leader is a visible individual, but not dominant. You don't stand out from the group. You're the facilitator. You're the guide, if you will. And if you shine the light on yourself, then the group doesn't succeed. Maribel?
I'm looking at the slide of the salad, and I'm also thinking about what Dana just said. I like the pictures. I like the pictures of the dogs and the sled, and in the sense that we're all moving in the same direction, that we're all pulling for one another. I can't tell you how many times I've been led by individuals who were all about them, and at that point I completely became disenchanted because it was no longer about us. And I just can't stress enough the importance of I don't want to stay on the same level, because obviously there is a leader in a group if you're trying to meet a specific objective, but that we're all in this together, and that no one is better than the other, and everybody contributes. And everybody has a contribution to make. And again, going back to stepping aside, on the slide with the eggs and the hot pink one, I think that a true leader, honestly, everybody knows that's your leader. You don't need to wear hot pink in order to stand out. I think as long as you're leading and you're sharing and you're contributing and you're listening and you're providing a path for everybody to follow, we're all in it together. We are completely all in it together. Nobody needs to, you don't need to showcase yourself. I think that your leadership definitely does it for you. And going on to the slide with the salad, I think that to become truly effective, you have to be a part of the larger community. It's not just about your department. It's not just about your library. It's not just about you. It's got to be, are you a part of the larger community in my school? And this is what brought the slide on, was I was reading some of the traffic on TLC, and I was looking at the titles of the librarians that were responded. The first title was middle school librarian or high school librarian, but I saw textbook coordinator, GT coordinator, community and schools coordinator, and these are the people that have gone outside of the four walls of their library and decided that I am a part of the larger community. And that happens also when the public, and I'll let Rhoda speak to the public and Dana to the academic, but it's being involved outside of your four walls. That is how you create clout. That is how you advocate for your programs. I just cannot stress that to me is one of the most important things about leadership.
I agree. A leader needs to look beyond their own organization. You need to see, especially for libraries, the way our libraries will succeed, especially in these times that are so bad, is for us to show our communities why we're important, why we need to continue to be funded. And if we have, I think it's easier when you have prior relationships with other organizations, whether they're civic clubs or the Rotary Club, it's your, for me, whether it's the Commissioner's Court or whatever, that you look beyond the library. You've got to look and see how the library or any other organization you lead affects the environment, the total environment. And I think that is a very important part of having a vision of where your organization should be heading. That's a part of the vision. Also, I think that when a leader facilitates, a leader does not dominate. A leader is one of many. And I think all credit should not go to the leader. The leader should make sure that credit is deflected to the group. That any effort is shown to everyone to be a group effort.
I want to encourage all of the participants today to look around and think about whose leadership do you follow and why is that? What is it that they do? What can you learn from them to enhance your own leadership effectiveness? Take advantage of the things that TLA offers you, such as the TLA's Tall Texans Institute, which is really an exemplary opportunity to improve leadership skills. But also volunteer for service opportunities within TLA and its divisions and roundtables. But basically, the way you develop your leadership skills is to observe, learn, and practice. And so if you watch people that you think are effective leaders, you'll really learn a lot because leaders, in my view, are not born. They're made. They work at it. They continuously learn, as we've said before. And I also want to encourage everyone on the other end and to step up to the plate. We need you as leaders. You are important people within your community, within the institution or agency that you're working with. You need to take opportunities for leadership outside of libraries. Don't be the one in the city council or whatever that only speaks up about libraries or dean's council or wherever you are. Leadership is incredibly rewarding. If you recognize something that needs to be achieved, then figure out how to get a group of individuals to come together as a team, develop a strategy, and make a difference. And when you've done that, it's just really an unmatched feeling. As I said, you won't find yourself on the lead on everything, but you all have talent, skills, passion, ideas, which can benefit all of us under your leadership at the right moment in the right situation. Leaders change the world in large and small ways every day. So whether you're transforming a failed organization, you're leading a new initiative, you're influencing a better way to complete an old task, or you're convincing others to serve or volunteer in their communities, leaders make a difference. And I am going to end where I began, which is why would you not want to develop as a leader? And I hope you all will. Final thoughts?
I'm going back to what you were saying, Dana, about taking that initiative. I've heard countless librarians over the years, in the years that I've been involved with TLA, well, nobody's asked me to volunteer. Nobody's asked me to help out. And you don't need to be asked. You don't need to be asked to do anything. If you feel there is a need, if you feel you have a great contribution to make, whether it's locally or at the state level or at the national level, just get up and do it. The opportunities are there. It's just a matter of, for some of us, that first step is hard. It truly is very hard, because I can tell you that when I first started in the library profession, I think I probably for a couple of years I just listened and watched. I watched the presidents of TLA go up on stage and speak, and I read the journals, and I watched who the key players were, and I learned so much from them. More importantly, I learned how committed and how passionate they were about what it is that they were investing their time and energy. And that's what made me just show up at meetings at TLA. I just showed up just to listen, and it wasn't long before I was on a committee. And I really got to see the backbones of the association. That approach is the same approach I've taken to wherever it is I've worked. I listen, I watch, I pay attention. And then I make the approach. You know, you go in with whatever it is you're trying to achieve. And honestly, taking that time to think about it and to know who's who and what's what, and being aware of that environment is what gives you, I think, the courage, the push to get involved.
Also,
to make things happen.
You can get. It's important to. I mean, we are not only library staff. We're members of the library profession, but we're also members of our community. And there's so many places where your leadership is needed in the community. Again, looking outside the library and getting involved there as a member of a committee, or taking your spot as a leader for some project. Look around. There's so many places that need your talents and need you there. And this is another way to, I think, to hone your leadership skills is to be on these community committees and different organizations, whether it's a religious group or a civic group, your child's school, whatever it may be. And I think you can learn a great deal from that experience. I'd like to recommend one specific title that we've used here at Harris County Public Library, and I think it is such a wonderful distillation of about leadership, and it's called The Leadership Challenge by Kuzes and Posner. And it's probably almost in any of your libraries. It's available very easily. And it talks about leadership in terms of five different qualities. And we've hit on all of them. They may say them in a different way. But I think it is a wonderful primer on leadership.
Well, I think we're ready for your questions. I want to take one moment and just express the thanks of Rhoda and Maribel and I to Ted and the TLA staff for arranging this, and also to Lee Hillier on the University of Houston staff, who's our sort of presentation guru, who did all these slides for us. And given that Maribel's got him on the program committee, he was squeezing it in between TLA stuff, so we really appreciate that. But I think we're ready for questions, Ted.
Yes, we are. So, and already we have one. Who is the author again of Leadership Challenge? I think that's Kuzes and Posner. Is that right?
Yes. It's Kouzes is the first name, is the last name of one author, and the last name of the other is Posner.
Thank you very much. And again, we want to encourage our listeners, if you have a question for any of our speakers or on any of the topics, you can chat that in the chat box in the lower left-hand corner of your screen, or raise your hand electronically using the raise hand button on your screen, and we will call on you, and you'll be able to ask your question directly. And we have a question now to all of our speakers. What is your personal greatest leadership challenge? Dana?
Oh, I get to go first. Okay. I think it's, for me, it's adapting. There's so many, the new generations are so different from the way that I came up in the profession and society and personally and every way else. And it's just trying to keep up with, and that includes everything from their values to, you know, they want to text me all the time or something. And is so it incorporates a lot of those. It incorporates continuous learning. It incorporates being able to understand and respond effectively to their different ways that they view things, from, you know, work-life balance to technology. And I'm stuck in my ways, as many of you know.
I think for me, I think I have to make myself listen more more effectively. Sometimes I think as people speak, sometimes I'm already thinking of answers and I'm thinking of ideas. And I think it's important to listen with great intention to whoever's talking in the group and not try to react ahead of time. I also think for me, I have to always remind myself to give all credit to the group, to say thank you, to recognize people, and also to make sure that everyone in the group has an opportunity to take part in whatever activity we're doing.
Maribel?
I would have to say that I need to adopt the 24-hour rule, which is I the minute somebody says something, I immediately want to bite. And I've learned the hard way that I've got to give myself time to react, because I could be making the biggest political mistake if I just let it go immediately. I have to take that time to process and think, and if it comes through in an email or I don't react, I just read the email, and I have literally gotten to the point where I have to get up and walk away, because if I start typing, I will regret it. And that's just my nature. I want to react immediately, and it's a struggle for me.
It's good to know that even our great leaders in TLA have challenges. The questions are coming in very thick and fast now. I'm going to give them to you in the order that they're coming in. Janice asks, how do you deal with a group you're trying to encourage and they just want you to do everything?
Are the tasks being broken up? Are we delegating? That's the first thing that comes to my mind. I don't know, Dana?
I think that you have to look at the underlying problem, which, why is that? Do they not understand your vision? Have you not communicated that to them effectively? Have you sold it to them? Do they believe in the vision you're trying to do? Do they get credit when they do it, or they just, you know, put in their effort and don't feel like that there's any reward at the other end? I mean, I think there's an underlying one or more issues there that are resulting in that behavior.
Yeah, that was my first reaction of that you have. You know, you really have to talk. You almost have to talk with the group and talk about your vision. Ask them what their vision is. Try to get a dialogue going, and then take whatever tasks are needed. Try to break those tasks up according to their vision.
Exactly.
Jennifer asks, what are some indicators that maybe you're not cut out for leadership?
I don't know. I'm a firm believer that you could be a leader at any level. And I think that there are some things that you're going to do well, and there are some things that you're not going to do well. Acknowledging them is part of understanding where you fit in the larger picture and where your abilities are, but I think that every single one of us can be a leader, and where we choose to make those contributions is really up to us, and with a deep understanding of how, of what we know about ourselves and how we can contribute.
I agree. I don't buy the premise. I think everyone can be and should be a leader in multiple ways, whether that's, again, influencing a group, like you take at work within your department, or a group within your community. It doesn't mean you have to be the dean of a library. It's a totally different thing. Administration is not leadership, and lots of administrators aren't leaders, and most leaders aren't administrators.
Could this also touch, Dana, on what you said about different styles of leadership, that just because the person is not speaking in a loud voice from the podium – doesn't mean they're not a leader.
Exactly.
And it's also what your definition of leadership is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a style issue, and people lead differently. And the other is sometimes someone who seems unwilling or maybe unable, but I think it's really an unwillingness, needs a little cultivation.
Bonnie asks, what piece of advice would you give new librarians aspiring to be leaders in the profession?
Get engaged. Join TLA. Go to a committee meeting and tell the chair you want to participate, because most chairs of, and particularly when you're looking at some of the ready-mades for new members roundtable, certainly in whatever your niche is, whether it's cataloging or reference or, you know, whatever. But look through the groups and get engaged. Step up to the plate. You'll find yourself, you know, in great demand.
Really?
That's how you learn.
That's how you all you have to do is volunteer.
Yes.
And that's the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be on your way.
And if you're not ready to do it at the state level, starting your environment. What is going on? Are there little committees that you want to get involved in? Is there something you're truly passionate about? Sometimes when it comes to, I mean, because TLA is large, and it can be a beast trying to navigate the waters when you're new and you're not sure where you want to be just yet. But definitely filter around, check things out, go to these meetings that you see in the TLA program book and see where your niche is.
Vera has a question kind of related to what we were just talking about. What tips do you have for encouraging leadership in others, especially those that are less willing?
Mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
I think we do far too little mentoring, coaching, whatever word you want to use for it. But I think that you need to talk informally. Doesn't mean you have to become best friends, but encourage people. Explain how something's done. A lot of people, and this gets back to what was just being said by Maribel, that a lot of people don't engage because they don't know how. Well, help them. You know, suggest meetings they might engage in. Invite them to a reception or take them someplace through the exhibits with you or whatever, just to try to make them feel more comfortable. But, you know, here, you know, we try to get people to publish and do these kind of things. Well, they need help. You just don't come out of school and you're instantly ready. So, again, this is leadership. Step up to the plate. Take somebody and help them.
You know, I think that when you see someone, give them a task that they can maybe do ask them to help you with a task, whether it's taking a chair of a subcommittee, you know, in your organization, or it's some specific, very specific task, and work with them. Make sure if they need some help, you're there to be there with them, to give them some confidence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's funny because the very first position I had or committee assignment I had in TLA was on bylaws. That's what they gave me. And that is dry, but, you know, it really gave me a sense of what goes on in TLA. And doing that helped me connect with other groups. If I didn't understand what I was doing, I just went to somebody else. You don't always get the, you know, I think there's this notion that, you know, I want, for example, everybody wants to be on the selection committee. There's a whole bunch of school librarians that want to be on the selection committee for the Texas Blue Bonnet Award. Well, you kind of have to work your way up to that. Be willing to do other things. Be willing to participate at the local level by helping arrange the luncheon, and you know, just and that can transfer to any membership on any committee. Is start small. Start to feel your way around, and in no time, you're going to find yourself that you're not just a member of that group, but you're going to become the chair of that group or the counselor of that group, or it's just a matter of just pony up, you know, go for it. I think it's just, you know, speak up.
I think most groups are looking
mm-hmm.
for new blood. Most organizations certainly TLA is, looking for a new generation of leaders. So it really is yours to step up. You know, it's your opportunity to take that initiative and volunteer. The other is, there is, I would say, a responsibility of people who are leaders in the organization to search out and help people who are coming up, who might be a little bit apprehensive about volunteering for some programs.
Marcia wonders, what do you think of the following statement? If you are leading and no one is following, then you are only taking a walk.
Correct.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, I mean, if you think you're leading, then turn around, look, see who's following.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true.
Todd wonders if he can utilize your slides in his Tech Trends presentation at conference next week. He comments that these are nice slides for encouraging readers in technology, and I think we're going to encourage Todd to get in touch with Lee Hillier, who can clue him into the permissions involved in that and who he might need to contact. And, Todd, I'll send you that after the presentation. From Cynthia, she comments, keep on moving and check off that laundry list. Seems to be a theme. Is there value in examining the effects of what was just accomplished rather than charging on for the sake of momentum?
I think that's a very valid question. If you don't assess what you're doing, what you've done, then some of those items on that laundry list might just not happen. I just assumed, and I'm the one that said, I just assumed that that is, everybody understood that that's a part of it. And, you know, and I have to, and you do. You have to assess what you're doing all the time. You have to evaluate it. Was it effective? What could I have done better? And then that does affect that laundry list. Oh, how you're going to target it. If you're going to target it, do you need to postpone it? And that's an ongoing practice.
I think you have to do both. You have to evaluate what you're doing and look ahead. I think the rapid pace of change in with technology and all, I think just makes us, I think, have to look at both ends of this. Evaluate, maybe change course a little if what we did needs a little bit of changing course while we're looking ahead to see what's the next thing we have to do to keep up.
I agree with what she's saying, but I think as a group, librarians are more engaged in inertia than charging. So I'm going to lean toward charging ahead.
I always say they can't hit a moving target.
Hey, I like that. I think that's so true.
Well, here's an application question from Richard. How do you deal with group members who do not share the vision? For example, a youth librarian who does not believe in facilitating video games in the library.
I think you need to have a discussion to find out what, you know, it goes back to, I think it was Rhoda that was saying she had to learn to listen, is why is that? You know, is there a valid argument someplace in her position, or, you know, can those issues be addressed if the goal is then to, you know, offer those video games?
And it could be that there's something even bigger than that. With the individual, and I believe in that discussion and having that discussion with them. Is there something really else on your mind, and getting to the root of it? Because it may not just be about the gaming.
No, it may be about her personal loss of her value to the organization, if that's a key
mm-hmm.
element of her position.
Mm-hmm.
And her vision of what the library is.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you have to talk, I think, especially any time, you have to talk with team members when there are competing visions.
Cynthia asks, how does someone young and new to their library staff build trust and respect?
By demonstrating it.
I think by doing a good job.
That you have to make sure you are the honest broker or integrity. When you're dealing with people, you have to, you know, give it your best effort, participate in the conversation, engage.
Reach out.
Show initiative and do a good and do an you know show initiative and do a good job in whatever you volunteered for,
and put your hand up.
Yeah.
Don't you know somebody was talking about? I think Maribel was mentioning people who said, "Well, nobody ever comes and asks me." Man, I love my librarians that when something's thrown out on the table, that you know, not literally but figuratively, you know, the hands go up with people saying, you know, let pick me, you know, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that kind of initiative.
That sense of when you're leading, when you're managing, say, you know, I've got this issue, I need your help. How can anybody help me out with this? Making them feel like they are a part of your management. That in order for you to be successful, they you need them, and giving them that angle, giving them that in into making it work, because it's going to affect everybody.
And creating an atmosphere where people want to get involved, making it a positive thing.
And that kind of relates to our next comment. Someone says, leaders have an obligation in leadership. Delegation is an important aspect of this. Many leaders are afraid to give up control. Do you find that to be the case sometimes?
They're not leading if they're controlling.
Yeah, they got some issues.
I once read that people don't like to give up control either because they're afraid that their staff can't handle whatever the situation is, or they're afraid their staff can really handle the situation. I think if there are delegation issues, you've got to really kind of look inward to see what the issues are.
And that's what you want to do, is you want your staff to take ownership. You want your staff to take on the issues and so that you can work on the larger issue, whatever it may be. I don't know. If giving control is that's hard. That's definitely a hard one. And I think there's a sense of insecurity in that, too.
Well, once we've given control and delegated a little bit, Nancy asks, leaders in training need recognition for their efforts. What do you see as good ways to encourage leaders? How do you recognize?
I think publicly thanking them. You can never say thank you too much. And you can thank them in many ways. I know there are managers who give out certificates. There are websites that often, you know, recognize leader, you know, someone who's taken a leadership role and done something. But I think you can never say thank you too much.
Agreed.
I'm a firm believer in, you know, emails are great, and I'm trying to be very good about emailing people and thanking them for their contributions, no matter how small or how big. I'm also a big believer in cards. I do send a lot of thank you cards out. I can honestly say I probably send them out at least twice a week. For you know, to people that are in my building, people that have served with me on committees, I agree with Rhoda. You can't say thank you enough, and when you do it publicly, it really is just a feather in their cap, and it just makes them feel so good that they made such a contribution, and they're willing to look and they're willing to help with the next one.
And with that, I want to thank you for this outstanding presentation. We've had a great leadership webinar with Dana Rooks, Rhoda Goldberg, and Maribel Castro. Great observations on leadership, particularly needed under the current circumstances. This webinar was brought to you by the Texas Library Association. I want to especially thank Nan Ellis, our registration coordinator, Marianne Emerson, our webmaster, Gloria Meraz, Director of Communications, Julie Serafini, who handled chat for you today, and I'm Ted Warner, your host for the webinar series. Also, we want to give special thanks to ReadyTalk, our platform for our webinars. Please remember that CE certificates will be able to be printed tomorrow, April 7th, on the TLA CE webpage, www.txla.org/CE. Recordings will be available next week at the same site. And please complete the evaluation survey following today's webinar. TLA is still fairly new to the webinar business, and we very much value your comments. Also on that site, you'll be able to see our other webinars that are coming up. We have a series on assessing and planning your library services, and especially on using annual reports to make your case. Registration is available on our website, and invoices are available on request for those premium webinars. We also have two other free webinars coming up after conference. Sian Brannon and Wilena Hildreth from Denton Public Library will be talking about teen homework centers, minimum resources for most budgets, on May 3rd. And Kathy Shaw and Sharon Swarner of Northside ISD in San Antonio will be talking about leading instruction, collaborating for success, the link between library instruction and faculty collaboration. Again, we want to thank everyone for visiting with us today. If you have any questions about any of our webinars, please contact me at the information on your screen, tedw@txla.org. And credit where credit is due, we had several credits for our photographs today. And Todd, rest assured, I will be getting you that information after we're done. Thank you very much to everyone for joining us, and thank you to our speakers.
Bye.